Clegane's voice was thick with contempt. Wouldn't be worth the bother of arming myself. This is a tournament of gnats. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. Yeah, you know, I thought I would kind of branch out a little bit, go with something a little more obscure, but man, you guys just knew it right off the bat.
I like the voice effort, too. That was some good work.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. I'll try. Yeah.
One of these days, I'll just do a whole audio drama. It'll be great.
I mean, you have an excellent voice for radio, Will. You should, you know, if you and Kristen really need, I think I've said this before, if you know you need some extra money at your homeowners, you should just narrate audiobooks.
Actually, well, that's kind of funny for a number of reasons. Number one is great voice when it's not obscured by audio issues on the show. Well, two,
that's true.
I definitely thought you were about to say that I have a face for radio.
No, I'm not. Aaron's not here, so random cruelty is going to be cut down on in this episode.
Oh, shucks. Well, and three. Well, we'll get to number three when we get to props and slops, but it definitely has to do with home ownership.
It's expensive.
Hey, Tommy. So it's nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks, Roy. I didn't even have to introduce myself today.
Yeah.
And neither did you.
It's been a while because
you know I did that.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, and well, the last time you were on, it was like the ghost of Tommy passed, right? Because you kept because you had such terrible audio issues.
Don't remind
that
me.
It was. I don't even remember how much of you ended up in the actual episode.
Less than a third.
I feel like wasn't that another one of those thunderstorms? Seems like you guys get a crap load up there.
We really did have a spring for the ages in terms of that. I replaced my sump pump twice, had a backup sump pump put in. So yeah, it was legit.
Jesus.
But I'm here now, and on a new computer, so everything should be hunky-dory, as David Bowie would say.
David Bowie?
Yeah, it's the title of one of his albums, Hunky-Dory.
Wow.
That's a musical reference.
I did not pay enough attention.
For anybody scoring at home, yeah, musical reference, circa 1972.
Google, yeah, it is definitely the fourth album. 71, yeah, mid-1971.
Man, and I said circa 1972. I'm just nailing it on all fronts. Get ready, listeners.
Yeah,
here we go.
All right, this is going to be the Tommy episode.
Strap it in.
All right. Man, I bet the listeners have been dying for that.
That's funny.
Well, let's go ahead and kick it into high gear here with Team Left for episode number 261 of The White Book, regardless of the fact that we're announcing that at the end of the banter. Man, I'm just, I'm all upended now that Tommy's back.
Well, you know, changing things up, you know, when you've done 261 episodes, you know, changing things up is good. Change is good.
Yeah, exactly. Progress.
Freshness.
Tommy, the fresh maker.
The fresh prince. Oh, love it.
Now there's a t-shirt, Roy.
Okay, well let's go ahead and get right into it, guys. And we've got a number of topics that we're hitting this week, listeners. But to start with, I think we're going to go ahead and hit on some organized play news. And many of you know that we recently had Mr. Zach Rayburn on the show. From FFG, he's their OP head, their organized play, I should clarify for folks. We kind of fielded some questions his way, and co-host Aaron, who didn't happen to be on that episode, had, let's just say, a lot of follow-up content that he kind of announced publicly with a kind of open letter. And he did get a response to it, and I think that's worth us chatting about. I know Tommy just sat down for a read. I know Roy looked back over it. What are you guys thinking here?
Go ahead, Tommy, because I was on the whole Second Sons episode that we endlessly went over this. So you go ahead and give your take on this whole thing first.
Man, I don't know if we can do whole take at a time. Maybe we should take individual topics at a time.
Sure. How about some? We'll break the letter up into a couple chunks. I don't want to read the whole thing, you know, word for word. And I feel like a couple things aren't really worth, in my mind, readdressing, like his apologies for, you know, kind of negative experiences people had in some more nebulous senses, rather than specific kind of concrete things to talk about here. So how about the melee shakeup as far as how everyone took it to have been announced for the Gen Con tournament as a championship versus how it turned out not to be and not to have a design and such, and kind of the communication issues that illustrates?
Well, I think that it's a twofold thing, right? I mean, there's the intended communication that they put out, and then there is, you're in business like I am, and perception is reality in business. And at the end of the day, FFG is in business, and the product that they're putting out is a product that's ready-made out of the box to be not only a Joust format, but a Melee format. And they've been really, I don't know, affirmative about both formats being relevant, and they produce cards that are designed to support both formats. If you're going to deviate from that attitude, I feel like your communication better be really crystal clear, especially when it's so far off from everything that was experienced in the previous iteration of the game.
Yeah, I think the thing that's probably the least convincing about his response when it comes to sort of the melee communication issue was that when Zach said to Aaron that he was surprised that first edition players didn't think of the second edition as an entirely new game, and that FFG OP was approaching prize support and approaching melee and Joust as, you know, second edition being a brand new game, which, you know, based on having been at Worlds 2015, that was sort of not the spirit that they were sort of trying to push on us. They were sort of trying to say from the moment they announced it up to that last Worlds that yes, second edition is going to be a new game, but there's going to be so much continuity and we want you to stay on as players to sort of help usher this new game that we have into great success. So the fact that they didn't communicate that there was going to be some fundamental changes to the way in which organized play is done, and they just sort of assumed that we would expect that, I think is probably the biggest failure with the communication about Melee.
You know what they say about assumptions. Think,
No, I've never heard that one. You wanna finish the rest of that thought, Tommy?
What, it makes you and I look like an ass?
There you go.
Or I guess it makes an ass out of you and I think is the way that you're supposed to deliver it.
You and me, I think, is how it's supposed to be. Cause,
oh, assume. Yeah, yeah. It's
assume ends in U-M-E. But, yeah. Okay, so Roy's point there brings to mind something that I took very differently from FFG, or at least somewhat differently. Yes, I still got that there was definitely a pivot here in how they were treating the transition to the second edition of the game and how they are evidently viewing it now as a whole new thing. But I really gathered from their initial announcements up through the initial preview articles, the big long announcement from Nate, and how they kind of walked through, you know, everything they decided to keep and what was getting tweaked and stuff. The message that I got from FFG for, you know, a year or so was, this is the game you knew and loved, but bigger and better.
New and improved.
This is something separate. So I don't know. I think that colored my perception of how, you know, OP and prize support and the like would be handled. I kind of assumed they would, at the bare minimum, stay the same, but hopefully also become bigger and better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in general, this if FFG really is approaching the second edition, I mean, I guess the three of us and the people who contribute to the White Book, we're probably the worst people for this, because we're all, I mean, Will, you've been playing since the CCG, and Tommy, I don't know, remember if you were a CCG player or not, but, you know, and I was playing for a year before this. You know, we all came in with this baggage from first edition, and FFG sort of at least seemed to be saying that they want us to continue to play the game and go into second edition just as excited as we were about first edition. And it just seems like they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. And I think that's what really got them on sort of Aaron's bad side.
Well, let's focus in more on the communication issue, because this one, I think, is important to me when I look at it. At his letter, because he transitions into it here after as a connection to the Melee changeup, and he talks about a couple different things that I find really interesting. The primary, or not primary really, but the first one chronologically here, is that he comments about how it's so difficult to conduct this two-way communication through manageable systems, and that forum threads are one of the most challenging places to answer specific questions, and that even the social media they employ, Facebook and Twitter, is not ideal for that purpose sometimes. And it's just really interesting for me to read, because from my viewpoint and my usage as an end user, those two kind of points that he's making, that forums suck for communication effectively, and that social media is better but not great, is totally reversed in my mind. If you're looking to try to make sure that people see something, I want it somewhere that is, one, let's say, archivable by search engines, so that players searching for information might see it come up in a Google search, which unfortunately Facebook's search capabilities for comments is sorely lacking. Plus, due to Facebook's algorithm, like they pick and choose what users actually see or is brought to their attention or what order, like, and Twitter does similar things in paid advertising and to boost posts and such. I can't imagine that FFG is going to pay to boost every like organized play related comment that they make on, you know, social media. It just, it feels really weird compared to being able to search something, to read through it chronologically, to easily track like the order of conversation without delving down into, you know, rabbit holes of nested comments. It just, it boggles my mind. And that's only the first of the two items, but I'll let you guys respond to that.
Well, and yeah, it's great that they say that those are suboptimal in their delivery of what they're trying to communicate to their customers, to the community. But where's the proactive response? Where's the, we are working on this, or we would like to be able to do it this way, that would be better, instead of just, you know, continuing to use communication issues as a crutch, as they've done for years. I don't know. That's something that specifically rubbed me raw, is that communication has been an issue that the community has harped on over and over and over again. And then, you know, as you use very commonly accepted and commercially utilized platforms, you say that they're suboptimal but offer nothing to look forward to. I don't know. I'm not sure what more to say about it than that.
Yeah, I find it just, it's one of these things that I think we can never really feel fully satisfied with why FFG, like why Zach doesn't think like message boards are the appropriate or the best way for this two-way communication. Because it seems to me that both FFG's own message boards or CardGameDB are a really good way. Like if you look at, like I'm just going to use like Blizzard, for example. Blizzard uses their Battle.net forums and Twitter to generally stay in communication with their communities. They don't do it perfectly. They have their own problem. But they do use these things that they own, both in their social media and their own proprietary boards, to communicate when they need to communicate. And it just seems to me just weird that he thinks this. But it probably has to do with the way in which, you know, he has, like, the corporate bosses have to sign off on all the things Zach or Zach's employees say. So I can sort of, I can maybe suss out why it's a problem, but I wish he was able to sort of just be a bit more explicit with why it's a problem.
Well, so I'm curious then, would, like, Blizzard, as an example company, not have similar levels of corporate red tape?
Exactly, and as you think about a corporate entity like FFG, they're not a publicly traded company, so the message that they send, the people that they need to sign off on it, you could probably count on one hand, as opposed to, you know, a publicly traded corporation where there's definitely an infinite amount of much more red tape that people have to go through if they want to put out a mass media message. If you look at their website and the things that are put on the front page of that website, I mean, Will, you yourself have written articles that are posted up on there. And they own the interest in the CardGameDB main page. You can't tell me that if they communicated something on the main page of their website, the main page of CardGameDB, and then also made a Twitter hit on, hey, check our main page or CardGameDB for info on XYZ, that the community isn't going to feel well informed. That is a legitimate effort, in my opinion.
Okay, well, let's hit up on my second kind of issue with his response on communication topics. And he does stress again the OP kind of subsite on the Fantasy Flight Games main page. So it's going to be fantasyflightgames.com/en/OP, which is great. Like, I'm glad that they've got that. That does feel like an improvement to me and a place where they can potentially put some of these announcements and tools to communicate, you know, the newsletter signups and things that he did bring up with us. But what I do take some issue with is its arrangement on the FFG main page, because if you go load, you know, fantasyflightgames.com, and you look at the navigation menu at the top, organized play, or even the abbreviation OP, or even potentially just play, is not listed. To find it as a link, you have to scroll down below the fold, as the saying goes, drawing off of stuff that would be on the bottom half of a newspaper below its fold. For anyone that's not familiar with a physical newspaper, thus meaning it's less likely to be noticed unless someone picks it up and flips it over, it won't catch someone's eye. That is where OP is. When you scroll to the bottom to their features, they then have organized play, Fantasy Flight Game Center, game tools, and careers. And it just, it does not feel to me like dropping it down there below the fold places it in a spot where it can succeed at its intended purpose.
Especially if you're a new player and you don't know what you're looking for. I mean, you have to be going out of your way and knowing what you're looking for to find that.
Yeah, I mean, well, they haven't launched. I'm really, with this sort of OP website thing, I guess this is definitely the communication thing that I'm willing to give Zach the benefit of the doubt, where if they really are relaunching it, I will be interested to see what exactly it's going to contain. So for me, this sort of last section of like what the OP website looks like right now, it's not particularly good. But if they relaunch it and they put, say, an OP-focused blog or something like that, that sort of they can update maybe once a month with, hey, here's what's going on with OP, blah, 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 I think it would be really great. But since he didn't provide any details to Aaron, and there hasn't been any sort of follow-up stuff since then, you know, I'm willing to wait and see with this last little
thing. We should certainly be hopeful for that, and I definitely am. But I think that no matter how well they do it, unless they support it with some of those, you know, main page, main headline, above the fold, to use Will's analogy, which I think is really good, links to it and things that's going to draw clicks from new players and new potential customers, I still think it's going to continue to be suboptimal.
Yeah, I really like Tommy's point about new players, and like these are, you know, any game really that FFG is making, aside from possibly Lord of the Rings and Warhammer Quest and maybe Arkham coming soon, are social games, right? And these new players in like that are into these competitive games want to find other players to interact with. They want to know about organized play. I mean, that's less of an issue for board games, I know. A lot of folks just want to stick with the same group of people that they play with, you know, every Friday night or whatever, and rotate through a handful of board games. And I know that there are people that do view LCGs that way, but that's not really quite like what FFG markets them as. And so, I don't know, I feel like being aware of that OP stuff is only a benefit for new players to draw them into community with everyone and keep them buying FFG products.
Well, and as much as I think that's true, especially with players of games like Thrones and Star Wars, etc., they tend to be people that are looking for tournaments, looking for places to go out and play the game with somebody new, see what's out there in the community, and get competitive. We also don't know what we don't know about new customers, and if somebody has gone to a Barnes & Noble and picked up a core set of Game of Thrones, because that is a new market where that's being pushed, that didn't happen so much with 1.0. I know it did a little bit with the core set, but I mean, you can regularly find 2.0 product at places like that, and if somebody that is not familiar with this type of game, is not familiar with how a community works for this type of game, and they go to the website and they don't happen upon something that shows them, hey, there's more than just playing this at my table. How do we know that they'll ever even know that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They could easily put a slip in future core sets that, you know, sort of say, hey, are you interested in this? You could go to this website. I mean, I think if as long as it's Googleable, like if they pay the money for Google, the first thing say you Google, you know, for all of their games, you type Netrunner tournament, the first thing that would come up would be their organized.
But they'd still
website.
Have to be searching for a tournament. Some people that pick this stuff up may not even know that such a thing would exist. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to put yourself outside of the head. Well, yeah, exactly. As opposed to the Google thing. If you Google, you know, Netrunner tournament, sure, that's a different story. But if you're opening up the box and you find something that immediately tells you, check this out for organized play and, you know, all the opportunities that are out there for you to go and play the game, I think that goes a long way and overcoming some of this, but
agreed.
You can't have enough saturation, in my opinion, because how often do you open a brand new product and there's marketing materials thrown in and you don't even look at it, you just throw it right in the garbage.
That's fair. Well, should we hit on some of the rest of the letter here? I know in some ways we're kind of beating a dead horse with some of these topics, so I don't want to bog listeners down too much with some of this, especially when after we hit some of his replies to specific instances in kind of tournament pairing and points and such at Gen Con, which I personally felt, you know, good about his response and how that worked out. But I think we get into bigger picture stuff again after that when we're talking about prize support and community-driven things and such. And he mentions that they're going to soon be announcing a community support card program, all capitalized proper nouns there. So I'm just very curious about what that really means. It's because it sounds like it's going to be something bigger and different than just the promo cards you get in a game night kit. Like, why come up with a new name for that when it's perfectly fine the way it is as far as terminology? But I can't imagine them just giving out large like swaths of card designs, because well, that's just a management and production nightmare on their side. So, I mean, I'm glad they do that at all as grand prizes here and there, but I'm aware there's a cap to that being practical. I just find it very interesting. And then mention about, you know, that they've listened to us and that national and continental championship prizes will be distinctly different, and you know, they're going to step it up for next year. I don't know. I feel good in general about his response on prizes.
Yeah. I would bet that the community support card program is basically a game night kit that individual people can purchase or events can purchase. That there'll be an application, and if your event gets approved, they'll send you these cards that you can give out as part of prize support. That's what my guess would be based on how they talked about it.
That's really certainly like the question that I got as well.
Or is that much better or different than a store? Like, how many folks are running these events not at stores? I mean, I know it does happen, like the Windy City Cup, right? And some of the New York events, you guys would be better experts on that than I.
I think, I mean, most things are run at stores, right? Because stores are the best gaming system. But sometimes it could be a pain in the butt to get retailers to order kits. You know, they've got a lot of other things to go on, or, you know, they may have a bad history with in the past ordering kits and, you know, things not happening, all these kind of things. Like, I've seen this too. Like, it'd be really nice to be able to just sort of cut the middleman out of sort of me being able to go to FFG and, hey, I would like to buy two summer kits instead of going to my store or two stores. And then, you know, they have all the other FFG product and they don't tell me when it comes in. All these kind of things. Like, cutting the middleman out for sort of big events that might want to use some FFG prize support, I think is a good thing. Because stores can sometimes be a pain in the butt, is just sort of my experience.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe that one didn't really generate the discussion I was hoping for, but there's more news. So, you know, we can keep cracking through there. So further clarification that Stalik is not actually the European Championship, though they do comment that they'll be continuing to support it with material and card design prizes for Joust and Melee due to their rich and long history, so on and so forth. He does not specify how long they will continue doing that, but utilizing "we are continuing to support" Stalik phrasing, and not saying this year or anything, does tend to kind of insinuate that they will continue doing it, you know, in the future for additional years, along with wherever the official European Championships wind up being, which I am eager to hear more information on.
It would have been sweet if they cut the ambiguity, though, and just said, we will continue to support Stalik indefinitely.
Yeah, I mean, they did give them... I mean, it's a very political answer, right? It's one that's guaranteed to make the European community really happy this year, which is the key that, you know, they're not going to lose their prize support at the last minute. They're getting their two card designs, yay. But they gave themselves enough wiggle room that, say,
exactly,
you know, 2017 is going to be the first... Yeah, the 2017 is going to be the first year that they do the European Championship. And I can imagine Stalik will also have its card designs next year. But what happens in 2018... Once, you know, or 2019, once sort of FFG begins to sort of really start promoting these European championships, then we may see Stalik fall away. But I mean, of course, this is just supposition. Like, this could literally be the best answer in the world, which is that as long as Stalik gets organized and continues this high level of attendance because of its place in the International Thrones community and the level of prestige that it creates, FFG is going to continue to support it. That's the best case scenario. I'm more worried that since he didn't give that clear answer, that best case scenario probably won't happen. But that's just me being cynical.
Whenever you leave an out, there's always a chance the out's going to be taken, and that's the way that I read it.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
You just run into a problem, right? Once they get their European Championship Tournament Series running, and Stalik is larger than it, and it's still getting two card designs, like, I could definitely see FFG OP going, well, once they've shown that they can do their own FFG-run European Championship, or Asmodee, I guess, in Europe, will they really want to be supporting Stalik as an official event? Or semi-official event, I guess, in the case that it is. And I'm concerned that they won't.
I would agree. I mean, it's in kind of an awkward spot anyway that's maybe not super productive to delve too far into, but at that whole semi-official sort of thing where it's not run by FFG but does offer these prizes that are literally only possible through FFG in the card designs, I feel like puts Stalik in kind of an odd position, and one that I agree that FFG/Asmodee will probably want to be out of sooner rather than later. Okay, well, maybe this next bit that I found interesting. I've got two more that I found interesting in his response. Maybe this next bit has some thought. And this is where he clarifies that, he understands that there are many passionate fans that play or prefer Melee, and that they do want to create opportunities to satisfy them. And then he comments about the potential power of having one standard play format for each of their games, but also mentions that there will be exclusive prizes for Melee tournaments at select events and special Melee side event offered at some regional championship locations, which is very vague. It makes me want to know what the criteria are. I would assume the select events are bound to be, the Continentals, Nationals, Worlds tournaments, but how are they deciding the some regional events? And if you're going to be doing the exclusive prizes at the large FFG run events and offering special consideration and things for some of the regional stuff, like, isn't it almost more practical to actually make a separate Melee tournament track? Melee regionals and that sort of thing? Like, it feels like what he's suggesting is not too far away from that.
Well, the thing that I think keeps that from being a reality is that there's too much overlap in the parties that would be potentially interested in that. And if it became a scenario where there's two separate weekends for regionals for Joust and Melee, and you love both formats, but you're only going to travel for one, guess which one it's going to be. And
I think I would pick Melee.
I think you would be in a very small minority when it comes to that, in which you would choose to travel for a Melee regional over a Joust regional. And I think that by keeping them somewhat loosely linked in that way, and the way that I read the statement of select regionals, I read it as ones that request it. Because I think that there would be very few regionals that would actually request support for a Melee event.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be by request. And this is something we talked about a little bit on the Second Sons that came out of the initial interview when he first did the test balloon of this system, which is, like, I just don't see the way in which regionals are currently given out and organized that turning regionals into a two-day event is a very practical thing. Because often regionals are just hosted at a store. And maybe this might just be a Northeast thing where we get a lot of people that travel, far and wide to come to our regionals from as, far away as, we get large number of people from as far away as like Virginia through to Maine and New Hampshire and the Connecticut and New Jersey and Baltimore regionals all got people from all over the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, and just being able to say, hey, you woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, drove 3 hours or 4 hours, played 5 to 9 rounds of Thrones, depending on if you made the cut or not, or made the finals. And then, you drove 3 to 4 hours back home, and then you got to get back up and do that again on Sunday to play Melee. Like, I just don't see that being something that is going to appeal to a critical mass of people. Now, if they started hosting regionals at conventions, that you could say, hey, there's, you could really encourage people to make a weekend of a regional because it's at something like, a comic book convention or a game convention or a variety of other things. Like, I think you could definitely make something like a mini Gen Con for each regional would be, really interesting. And I think a much better approach if you're really going to take Melee as a consistently offered side event seriously. But I don't think that's what FFG is going to do. So I really fear that this Melee initiative will fall flat on its face unless they let regional organizers set a separate Melee date. Like, I think in New York, we could support a Melee regional if it got its own
weekend. And that was what I was kind of getting at when I posited the thought of a Melee, tourney circuit, so to speak, would be that it would be shifted or skewed to allow separate dates.
Absolutely. I understand, the problem, right, is the best way to put this is now that they've created this championship season, they said that they're only going to support one format for this championship series. And that one format leads to there are three card designs on the line right now, and maybe when they throw the Chinese Nationals in again, four. You can get a card design at Gen Con for Joust, you can get a card design at Stalic / later the European Championship, and then at Worlds. Like, that's the pyramid. And separating Melee out from that creates a weird situation where I just wish they would just once a year say, maybe in between the regional and national seasons or something, and say, hey, look, stores that want can apply for this explicit Melee kit that, has a different set of prize support than the Star Championship or the Summer kit or whatever, and, you can host one weekend this big Melee, come up with the term, a Melee something, and do it. I think that could be really successful, but I fear that's not what
I think. I think get behind that, too.
What I think would be really fun, especially if you're going to keep it as this kind of weird alternate side format that's never going to be equally supported as in the same way that Joust is, if you put it in the off season during, what is to be Star Wars season, right? And then you said, here's an excuse for all of you Thrones people to all get together and have a weekend. Because, in however you want to divide up the map across the country, here's your Melee weekend for this region, for this region, for this region. I think that that'd be an elegant way to do it.
I agree. I think overall, it sounds like we're kind of on the same page on the possibilities and how to give Melee increased support, hopefully maybe enough support to appease the fans without, tripping all over the feet of Joust, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm just very worried about this Melee initiative, to be completely honest. It'll be interesting. I'm interested to see where it goes, and I hope that FFG does it in a way that'll be possible for us to support it as much as, because I really do enjoy Melee a lot, and I would love to be able to host FFG supported events in my community.
Okay, so here's my last takeaway from the letter that I've really honed in on, and that was the fact that Zach reminded me that the Battle of the Trident event exists, which I had admittedly forgotten about. I think it's hopefully getting close to time that they would advertise it again and draw folks' attention to it again, which would be awfully nice. Just I think it's going to be really cool and fun. And I'm excited for that. Was there anything else from the letter or on the Battle of the Trident that you guys really wanted to hit on?
Well, I think, of course, it's very cool that they're trying to make an effort and bring something new in like that. From what I've heard from people that played earlier in the game than I started, there was something similar to this. I think it was maybe related to Minstrel's Muse. Does that sound right, Will?
Yeah, the very first game night kind of kit season, when we first switched to the first edition of the LCG, had players voting for three different options of cards, and I apologize that I only remember two of them, because it was kind of a funky setup, because you were voting on multiple things, if I remember, within the same event. So, like, you were voting for the Minstrel's Muse to be created and which house it should go to, or you were voting for the old CCG version of Tywin Lannister to be reprinted, which was kind of like the current Stannis, though light years better. and I don't remember now what the third option was, but it was kind of strung out, and you could also like vote against things. So like, I don't know. I don't think the voting was set up well. So hopefully this one will be much better.
Well, and I think they've had some really good success with things like the, I can't remember, was it the Plugged In Tour, or I can't remember the name of it.
I think so, sure. Yeah.
But they did that for Netrunner, and that was really successful. And I know that they've had some similar things for X-Wing and the like, and those have all gone over very well. And so, I mean, I love the fact that something like that's being done for Thrones. And somewhere in the back of my head, I can't help but wonder if, especially given that this is something where there's voting involved, if this isn't a little bit of a feeler and a logistical test for what FFG is capable and ready to handle for the imminent release of L5R, which is, you know, inherently based, at least in its past iteration,
yeah,
with that kind of interaction with the community. So I've got a little bit of curiosity if that's somehow related, but one way or the other, you got to love it. Anything new and anything fresh that they're introducing into our game, how do you not like it?
I definitely think Tommy hits the nail on the head when he says that this Battle of the Trident is a beta test for the ways in which they might support the sort of OP that the L5R community expects. So, I mean, I think it's great. I mean, it's a really beautiful card, summons, and hopefully, you know, and it's a fun thing, like, and it's going to hopefully drive people to want to come to the store championships. So I'm pretty excited for it. I mean, but it's still a little bit confusing about when it will be announced and whether or not we'll have the full text of the agendas, or if they'll just say sort of like, you vote for this concept. You know, it's not really well announced, but I think, you know, it's interesting and it's good that they're trying something different.
Okay. Was there anything else from the letter you guys wanted to hit on before we move on to a recurring segment?
I think we were pretty thorough in getting after most of the content there. The one thing that I'd like to say is that even, especially for myself, in aspects of what I commented on the letter, I was harsh about it. I think that there's still something to be said for them making any effort to communicate and explain the logic in which they're dealing with certain specific issues and, you know, what their intent is, because even just that is a step forward from what we had seen previously. So, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due, and I don't want to just come off as a negative Nancy, but, you know, that it is what it is.
Definitely. I mean, the thing that's most important about this letter is that he did take the time to go point by point and generally address every criticism that Aaron laid out. And I think that's really, and allowed, of course, Aaron to publish it in a public forums, which I think is really good and really refreshing. And hopefully it sets the sort of tone that Zach, both the interview that he did with this our show and the sort of response to Aaron, I hope that this is sort of the tone that Zach takes going forward, you know, as he moves into sort of his first full year of this new system in 2016, 2017, that, you know, maybe this could be the turning point. And I hope it is.
Agreed. I was very happy with the level of communication afforded by this. So I'm just hoping that continues. Okay. So let's hit up a segment that fans seemed to kind of dig the last time that we had tried it, and that is going to be What Would Garland Do? WWGD, which actually sounds way worse now that I abbreviate it. But anyway, that won't matter to a lot of listeners. So what would Garland do? This is a bit where we talk about cards that we personally really like or keep considering or thinking about, but just can never quite make the cut in the deck. And so I left the topic pretty broad this time for folks. I, of course, just want to hit on a card per host. So narrow it down to the one card that you really feel fits this. But the topic this time is just events. So what one event, I'm going to let our returning host, Tommy, hit this first. What one event just never quite makes the cut for you?
Oh, damn, that's such a hard choice to make, especially given the nature of events in second edition being, you know, primarily driven towards specific houses. But I'll kind of answer it in a roundabout way. No matter what deck I'm building, always in consideration are Hand's Judgment and Nightmares, right? And when I'm playing Lannister, treachery inherently spins into that. And for me, the way that I would answer this question right now, depending on the house that I'm building, I'm always feeling like I'm torn between those three or two cards and how many of each I'm going to include. Because I know that I'm including some of each, it's just a matter of how many. And I feel like I'm a little bit copping out on the nature of the question, but I feel like it's just so... all three of those cards are so ubiquitous right now that it's kind of the elephant in the room that has to be addressed by one of us. And it's always such a hard choice for me between all three or two, depending on the house.
Yeah, no, I think that is actually a pretty interesting way to approach this particular topic, even though you kind of hedged your choice a little bit. But I think it is fairly valid with where the game is right now to say I've got a couple that I rank pretty similarly, but my house choice tends to be the determining factor in which one actually gets cut. So I dig it. How about you, Roy?
Mine's going to be more specific. Mine is As Hard as Winter, which is the House Stark event that's in the box. It's one cost. And it, you know, it is a really interesting event. And I like really, 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 really have wanted to build a deck where it works. Like the deck that I took to Dance with Dragons here in New York was a Stark Sacrifice deck built around the new Catelyn. And I did pretty well with it and worked really well. And I had, the initial draft of it had Hardest Winter, but unlike a card like Needle, it just never really did what I would want it to do. There was always other... it just wasn't consistent enough. It wasn't sort of... you had to have these certain pieces in together that I really wanted to make it work, but it never quite... you never quite got the sort of awesome combos that when you look at this card, so it always ended up getting cut for make room for another character or make room for, you know... some more cancel or something like that. Like there was always something else that this combo card was sort of getting pushed aside. And I hope that maybe with the second cycle or into the third cycle that we'll get some sort of more winter plots that are interesting and that sort of you can get a good winter opening that will sort of maybe you can get this Heart of as Winter combo deck going. And I would really love that. But right now when I'm sort of thinking about Stark Sacrifice as a theme, Hardest Winter always ends up at the cutting room floor.
Oh man, yeah, I think I'm there with you. My Shaga sensibilities look at that card and think, oh, I could do some really cool combo stuff with this. You know, kind of reminds me in some ways of some first edition cards that I loved, but then I realize that it's almost like strictly worse. Like in the econ game of second edition, like I'm losing out on the cost of the event. And my character is, at best, the same cost as the one I just lost, but probably less. So I'm losing out there many times. Plus, I'm out an extra card, and it just doesn't quite add up yet. I feel like maybe it would make more sense to me if Stark had like pleasure barge in house or something that gave me a big several card boost at once to try and offset this. But yeah, I can't quite make it there either.
Does the new agenda change that opinion for you at all? Like in a deck where you know that you're skewing heavily toward those winter plots, and potentially on a you have it built in such a way that you're skewing towards a big swing turn, maybe running the Winds of Winter plot itself with a two claim, and you know that you want to maximize your one big turn, and you are sacrificing a character, either an Arya Stark to take out an opponent's character, and then stand your board with Rob, making a big Shaga play, because as you said, it really does appeal to your Shaga sensibilities, and then, you know, maximize that with an unexpected challenge at that two claim. Is that what, like, the type of scenario that sells it for you in that type of build?
Maybe. I think I really wish the event, maybe the event would be too powerful if it didn't cost one, because you could, you know, offensively Valor and get some character sort of synergy going. But I think maybe Valor, or if there's more sort of mass removal that you can sort of get this to. I think right now the problem is, except if you're using sort of Jon, it's sort of hard to get a sacrifice engine going that is consistent. And particularly because you have to lose at least a decent character to put a slightly, as Will was saying, it's like a slightly worse character into play. So it just sort of, I think the card is too balanced, I guess, would be what, even in a Kings of Winter build, to sort of do what you really need to do until we get, I think, a few stronger winter plots that you really want to.
I haven't played enough Stark yet with the Direwolf attachments, no, but you can eat your own characters now.
With what? With can eat your own characters with, like, Grey Wind? Yeah, but the problem is it has to be a character of, like, Grey Wind can only kill characters with two strength, you know, if you have Rob out with two strength or less, right? And Hard as Winter has to be a character with lower printed cost, so you would just be recycling, say, like, you know, a House Tully Knight for, I don't know, something worse.
Well, but it,
want, like, Rickon?
Again,
like,
with the standing your entire board ability, I think that, you know, I'm not sure. I get the fact that you're not getting maximum value out of it, but having that extra potential icon might just be enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's maybe some like tricks to get rid of a kneeling character and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, you're right. But I just don't think it's consistent enough yet for this card, which seems really interesting to just be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm right there that with Roy, that it's just not there. And Tommy, I wanted to try and consider it in light of some of the new winter cards and the agenda and stuff, but I'm just not feeling it yet.
Don't misunderstand. I don't think it's there either. I'm just, you know, musing at stuff because there aren't a lot of cards right now that raise your eyebrows and say, hey, is there some crazy junk I can do? Because the card pool just isn't that big.
Sure enough. Well, okay. We might have exhausted that particular one, so I'm going to go ahead and jump to my card. And mine is, I guess, maybe kind of the happy middle between both of you guys. I only picked one card, but I did pick a neutral card, so it could apply in multiple places. And I picked Support of the People. It's a card I was so excited about when it first came out. Tried it in a couple different decks that just never quite seemed to get there. I mean, I definitely have some locations in mind that I want it for, and I definitely feel, along with many people, that the power of the power challenge is boosted in second edition as compared to first, but I don't find myself wanting to really commit like overwhelming force to it quite the same way as I might other challenges. And so supported the people. You know, I kept winding up having in deck in hand or whatnot. But then I would realize that I was having to make choices between making, you know, the intrigue and the military and only winning the power by two or what have you, or playing the support of the people and not making the other two challenges. And so it's rotated out. I don't know. Are you guys seeing or considering it much?
Does the house that you're playing change your opinion at all?
I mean, possibly. I'm so torn, you know, because there are a couple houses where their location base makes me want to consider it more. Well, their location base sort of does. I should say they have really tempting locations that I want ASAP. And they even have like focus on power challenges. You know, let's say Targaryen and Baratheon. But they've really only got the couple that I want. So if I've already got one, then just searching out the dupes not big for me. Like, yeah, okay, Greyjoy's got quite a few targets and can win unopposed, so maybe they've got it. But now I'm fighting against a lot of other cards that I'm wanting to include there. So, I don't know.
I feel like Baron Greyjoy, it's really hard not to include at least one or two of them.
I think Greyjoy definitely, because in Greyjoy, that three, you want the Great Kraken, and that three cost just hurts so much more in Greyjoy, I think, than Barra, because Barra definitely, I think, feels like a faction, at least when I play it, that once you set up, like, you know, Mel and a couple support characters, you're sort of okay money-wise. But Greyjoy is just, I always feel starved when I play Greyjoy for gold, and sort of being able to, the tempo hit of being able to turn your draw and power grab engine and give Balon stealth for one gold is really good. And plus you can just go grab boats if you do end up having to play Great Kraken out of hand. Or
in Vera, it seems like they're supporting that dominance theme more and more, and I feel like that's the place where I feel like this card's always going to have a home, is supporting that deck. And it, from the cards that they keep putting out, it doesn't seem like that's going away. I think it's going to be something that sticks around for Vera, at least probably until the first rotation, at minimum.
Yeah, I definitely think Barra, I mean, particularly if they print more, the consistency is going to be really important for the Dominus deck if it's going to become really tier one, and Support of the People does help smooth that out. But I can still definitely see, because so far trying to build the Dominance deck right now out of Barra, like, spots are really tight, and I could definitely see how this event that is really bad to top deck, I could definitely see.
But does it allow you to, instead of running multiple copies of some of your locations, does it allow you to run less copies and just get the one that you want, and thereby increase your consistency?
I think once the deck is an NPE, like once the Dominance deck is solved, that's probably what it will do, but I don't think it has enough tools to consistently to be that predictable.
I think it's really close.
I guess. Yeah, I think it is really close. I think it's a couple cards away, but I think right now it's, you can, I think many decks can still stop a Support to the People, Support of the People rather. And if that's what you, if you're relying on Support of the People right now to get, say, your Iron Throne, because you only have one copy and your opponent is able to
hands
stop
judgment.
You from doing that, I think
Hands
Judgment or things like that, I think that really screws you up, because there's just not enough consistency right now within that Dominus deck. But it's almost there, as you say, Tommy. But I think when it is there, Support will be a 3X. But I think right now they want to just play them and draw
sure.
the cards.
Okay.
But I think it's a good pick, Will.
Thanks.
Really good pick.
You know, I thought I would try. Well, I think overall that was a good topic. I'm sure we will revisit what would Garland do here in another few episodes and hit on another one. But I think now it's time for every listener's favorite part of the show. drops and slops. Right? That's the listener favorite, right?
So in other words, everybody just shut it off.
If they make it this far.
Yeah, yeah, it is their favorite because it's the end and they don't have to listen to us anymore.
It's true.
Well,
I say go for it. Embrace it, Roy.
Well, I'll kick it off by both propping and slopping Deus Ex Mankind Divided. It is a really, really fun game, and it has a cool story, and it's really well executed. And like that gameplay that you're often promised in these kind of franchises of being able to solve situations that the game puts you in multiple ways, like you can shoot everybody or sneak around and shoot no one, is actually really well executed. I want to slop it for being so poorly optimized and almost killing my computer twice while trying to play it and constantly crashing. I think I've solved most of these problems by hours of work of optimizing my computer, but I want to prop them for designing a really great game and slop them for just doing such a shitty job of polishing the final product on a technical side.
Well, I will prop United Airlines and their new business class because, as you guys are both well aware, I've been doing all kinds of traveling for business lately and have been taking some really lengthy flights to China, Germany, and some other countries. But my God, do they do it right in that business class. The scotches that they offer, and they just keep bringing them to you, and they are free of charge. The fully reclinable seats that go all the way down into a bed, and the television selection that allowed me to watch Deadpool and Ant-Man and almost all these, you know, Marvel multiverse movies that I've been behind on. Just fantastic. So great experience, and props to United.
Okay, nice. Well, I guess I'm going to keep things positive for just a moment, and I'm going to follow up with a prop for the episode to something that I just discovered before recording this podcast on the second page of Google results. Yes, that's right, listeners. I went to the second page. I know it's not something folks normally do, but I found something amazing. I found reference to a website called asearchoficeandfire.com. Have either of you guys heard of this place before?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Roy has, at least, but maybe Tommy will share in my mystification. Like, because this changes the ball game for finding quotes to open episodes. It is a website where you can select any or all of the Song of Ice and Fire novels and short stories, and then search by keyword to get snippets of the books that contain that. Basically, it'll give you a long list, and it will highlight and have clear to read the paragraph that term appears in, and kind of a faded out chunk of the above and below, so you couldn't just sit and read the whole book very easily. But it's phenomenal for something like that.
Yep, just went and looked at it, and that is awesome.
It is the search engine that powers a million nonsense Reddit theories about Song of
Ice and
Fire. Oh,
that makes sense. Oh man, there's some good ones. That actually kicks me into a second prop. I apologize that I'm going for it right now without someone else's turn. But that's going to be to the local library con, which was here at the Springfield area, like municipal library. It was very respectable for local con, second year, probably 2,000 or 3,000 in attendance. Vendors and good grief, like a third of the people there in cosplay and different stuff. We ran some demos and hung out, but there was a panel on Game of Thrones theories that that Greg and I attended, and it was pretty cool. I had not heard the dragon genetics theory before. Go look it up if you want, listeners. It basically maps out how if the ability to hatch and or ride dragons is carried on the X chromosome, like how you can map out the Targaryen family and like who was actually able to hatch dragons and then why dragons died off and stuff. It was amazingly fascinating. Go check it out.
So I have another really important prop, which is I want to prop my girlfriend Alec, because yesterday, Tuesday the 30th, was our 1 year anniversary. So
congrats.
We've been together for a year, and yeah, we had a fun little anniversary where we stayed in a hotel in Manhattan.
Give it up for love.
And it was really nice. Yeah, love is what keeps the world go round. It also keeps you out of the danger zone, I hope.
Wait, I'm not ready for the danger zone yet. I still had a slop and two announcements.
It's fine.
Yeah. Gosh, we're still on the same page. Okay, actually, Roy's on the next page, but Tommy and I are on the first page. Okay. So,
of course.
Slop. I have a huge slop, and that's going to be to plumbing. OMFG, owning a home sucks. We've been fighting some plumbing issues off and on for the last 6 weeks or so. We had the plumber go ahead and kind of scope things out with a camera this week. And long story short, it looks like we're looking at a plumbing bill somewhere in the range to like $6,000 to $8,000, which is not something I expected to get into this soon after buying a home.
Yeah, as I went through before, we've experienced our share of that stuff, and welcome to the party. It's fun.
Party. That's not how I would have described it. But hey, at least we can grab some beers and commiserate about our watery losses.
No doubt about that.
Okay, so then after that, I've got the two announcements. One is actually tournament related and connected to some things we were talking about earlier. And that is that we're going to be hosting a Melee tournament here in Southwest Missouri over at Metagames Unlimited. Some of you have attended a regional or a store championship there in the past, or some of the strictly player-run events we've done otherwise. And we wanted to kind of prop things up, pick a little downtime in the scene to show the Melee format some love, much like we were talking about before. So we're looking at October 1st. We're still hammering out some time and price and prize details for it, but I wanted folks that were interested in trying to have kind of a large store championship to regional sized Melee event to know, maybe kind of block off calendars and kind of look at coming down that Saturday. I'm going to try to do my very best to at least make sure the grand prize is the coolest thing I can, which is hopefully going to work out well for the winner to be featured on one of the second batch of tokens that we wind up doing for the White Book. So I've got more tokens coming. I guess that's another announcement. I am planning on filling in some of the other types. But your art on a token is the closest I can get to a card design. So I hope that entices some people.
It's a great store, great venue. I'll do my best to be in attendance, Will. Sounds awesome. But for anybody who hasn't been there, give it a go. It's fun times.
Okay, and the last one is an announcement about the podcast. And that is that I've taken my co-hosts, let's say, strongly worded suggestions and feedback from a couple of listeners to heart, and have decided we will start a Patreon. We're still hashing out some details of exactly how that's going to work, exactly what levels we're going to offer folks, but it is coming, so keep your eyes peeled for that announcement.
And so since Will gave his plug for his upcoming event, I know that it's super, I shouldn't say super, but it's a little more in advance than we were last year. It looks like our annual Windy City Winter Cup will be held on December the 10th, and that is a tournament in Greater Chicagoland area that we hold at a bar every year for quite an impressive trophy and a lot of other swag, so stay tuned for details. The group will be posting additional information on Facebook. I don't do social media, so I'm not privy to that, but I know it's coming, and it's one of my favorite events since we've been doing it, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
That's a good date, Tommy. Actually, I might actually be able to make that work and go to Chicago for December. And that's like a interesting. I will actually consider trying to make it out.
You are welcome to crash at my house if you can.
Awesome. Well, that of course makes it much easier to go. Yeah, I'll. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, because that time of year is. There's not a lot going on
just
right
early
before
enough
Christmas,
that
right?
It's so not
it's like
in the muck of it.
Yeah, just early enough. It's not in the muck of it, yeah. But things are sort of starting to calm down as everybody starts to sort of like pack it up for the extended holiday season in the U.S. So yeah, it's a good idea.
Okay, well then, since Roy was so eager to earlier, why don't you turn the page for us?
Uh-oh, I'm in the danger zone right now
because
I can't remember.
Yep, you're
what
in
Will
the danger zone because
episode.
Another page of the white book is closing in right around you as we turn it.
Oh, God, it's terrifying.